Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
What's up, everybody? You are watching slash listening to the Command Zone podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jimmy Wong.
And I'm DJ, coming over from Jumbo Commander.
That's right. And we are wrapping it up today. We are finishing off Modern Horizons 2. All of the cards that we are analyzing for the 99 legendary creatures will come in time. There are a lot of great cards in this set, right, DJ?
That's right. And if you're interested in seeing the white cards, the black cards, the multicolored cards, the blue cards, the artifacts, those are all in previous episodes. Today, we're talking about green and red cards.
Yeah.
There's some good ones in here.
Gruul. And to, of course, play these cards, you're going to need these cards. So head on over to cardkingdom.com/commandzone. If you'd like to purchase any cards for yourself, that's our affiliate link. Just type it into your browser, your phone, hit that go button. Is there a go button on
the go button?
Yeah, the go button. And then once you've hit the go button and you're on the HTML page, you can just browse the store like normal and buy all of your singles, sealed magic product, everything that you're going to need. There are so many great cards these days. In fact, there's so many cards. I'm still trying to collect all of the Strixhaven Mystical Archives. Modern Horizons 2 is here. We have the cool alt art. Pick it up at cardgame.com/commandzone. And while you're there, get some Ultra Pro products or go to your local game store and get some Ultra Pro products. Support them as we all come out of this pandemic. I know stores are going to be hurting, and bringing a life back to those stores is going to be better when you have a cool playmat to play your cards on. Final way to support the show is directly at Patreon. Every single week, we shout out a special patron, and this week's episode is dedicated to
Tristan Sprouls.
Tristan.
You rock.
Rock. You. Rock. 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 All right, so, like DJ said, white, black, and multicolored is episode 401. White gets two potential staples, and I go nuts over a certain black card. The blue and colorless review is episode 402. We had a contender for one of the best swords in Commander.
And that land.
Oh, yeah, that land. Yeah. Oh, my gosh, that land. I'm just thinking about it again. And finally, now we are at 403. This is red and green in the 99. Don't forget to subscribe. We'll talk about the commanders at some point as well. There are a lot of interesting choices here for that. And let's just, I guess, get right into it. Let's start with the red cards.
That's right. Starting off, we have Brea's Apprentice. 2 and a red for a 2/3 artifact creature human artificer. When Brea's Apprentice enters the battlefield, create a 1/1 colorless Thopter artifact creature token with flying. You can tap, sacrifice an artifact, choose one. Exile the top card of your library until end of turn. Until at the end of your next turn, you may play that card. Target creature, or this is the other one, target creature gets +2/+0 until end of turn.
Okay, so you can pump something, or more importantly, it looks like you can do some cool red type card draw, impulsive draw, where you're exiling top card of your library, and notably, it's you may play that card, so if it's a land, you can play it.
Always good to see play rather than cast on these kinds of cards.
Yep.
I think that we can compare this to sort of like PNLR.
Yep, PNLR also enters the battlefield with a 1/1 color Thopter and has 2 activated abilities, but does need to tap. You can do 1 in a red to give an artifact +1/+0 for a creature, or you can pay 1 to sack an artifact and target creature can't block this turn.
Yeah, but PNLR, not expensive, 35 cents, and not played a lot, you know, 1,500 X in artifact weak strategy, so kind of weak. So Brea's Apprentice isn't an upgrade over PNLR, even though the bodies appear to be the same.
Yeah, I think so. Impulsive draw, especially if you're in a red deck and you don't have other ways of getting card advantage, really. Impulsive draw is one of the ways that red has to do it these days. My question is, are you going to just play Outpost Siege instead? Because you get a free exile every turn off the top of your library and you can cast that card. That seems pretty good.
Yeah, it's 4 mana. I feel like we're not stretched for draw anymore, for impulsive draw anymore, right? Like, so I feel like Brea's Apprentice might be a little bit weaker. Maybe you need it for the artifact bodies. You want 2 artifact bodies.
Right, that's, I mean, nice.
The other thing that I'm thinking of too is that it's a downside that it's a tap to be able to do this. Having just a sacrifice outlet could be quite good. Sometimes you want to sacrifice your own stuff, and having a tap on this means that it's slow. You can't do it the turn it comes into play because of summoning sickness. And also, you can only do it once without a lot of shenanigans. You
know? Yeah, I think this maybe would have been a little more powerful if they said sacrifice an artifact, choose one, only do this once a turn. So you don't need to tap it, but you can't just sit there and sack 10 artifacts, exile 10
actually
cards.
I would love that, because it's until your next turn, and then you can sacrifice it. Never mind. We're talking about a card that doesn't exist.
That doesn't exist. That's
this
right.
This card is fine, and you'll play it in some of your commander decks.
I think you'll play it in Brea, obviously. That would make sense there.
I mean, just Why is Brea's apprentice red? Is she going to have an apprentice in like all the colors?
Oh, that'd be interesting. Cool. I saw that. Yeah, I saw that note online. Maybe she's going to have a white, blue, and black apprentice as well.
I would play cool. all of those. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, that would be sweet to have the full four of them. You know, if you're going to play two in a red for a body and you want two bodies to come in with it, play Thopter Engineer. This card is super underrated. It gives you a 1-1 Thopter when he comes in the battlefield. And it says artifact creatures you control have haste.
I know.
That
right?
is a cool card.
That seems just as good, if not, I don't, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, look, if you're really hurting for card draw and you're playing Brea's Apprentice in a four-color deck with Brea, then maybe you're not building your deck right. So
this might just be like the
very specific red artifact decks that it works in.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I'll toss some shade. I'll toss a Thopter and it'll provide some shade. All right, next up we have Calibrated Blast. Two in a red for an instant. Reveal cards from the top of your library until you reveal a non-land card. Put the revealed cards on the bottom of your library in a random order. When you reveal a non-land card this way, Calibrated Blast deals damage equal to that card's mana value to any target. And this also has flashback on this, so when it's in the graveyard, you can pay 3 red to cast it, and then you exile it out of your graveyard. So this is a card, you reveal cards, let's say you reveal a Relentless Rats off the top, it's going to deal 2 damage to any target, and then you shuffle, or you put all those cards randomly on the bottom of your library.
Yeah, the situation you described does not sound good in Commander. I do not want to deal 2 damage for 3 mana at instant speed.
Yeah, it could be Demonic Tutor too, it could be a lot of different cards that are 2 CMC. This card, I don't think is great.
So here's the thing, all of those downsides, like the floor on this is obviously bad because you're running Soul Ring in your deck.
Yep.
You know, hopefully your curve is around 3.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that should be around, that includes land. So hopefully it's around, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 or something like that.
Okay.
That's not something I like. I mean, maybe there are decks out there that really appreciate direct damage, like Firesong and Sunspeaker.
Yeah.
Or, you Neheb, know, Neheb really yeah. likes some direct damage. So there might be some direct damage decks out there. But just as removal, I want my removal to kill the things reliably.
Yeah. I think this is a card that has a fun idea, but similar to Brea's Apprentice, a couple of things just don't work the way that I would want it to personally. One, you don't get the card. It's 2 in a red, and then you put all those cards on the bottom of your library in a random order. So you don't get to do any sort of like interesting bottom of the deck manipulation. Maybe you're playing a Grenzo. Or if they went into the graveyard, that'd be better too, because this has flashback on it. And if you're playing this in the Heb, you probably don't want to play it because you're playing a lot of X spells, and those have low CMCs or mana values.
Oh, you're
X,
right.
X, red. And it's like, not great.
Okay.
So I don't know. Like 3 different things of this card don't work for me. I like that it has flashback. Maybe in a deck with top deck manipulation, you can play it with that new Brainstone that allows any color deck to now have a Brainstorm effect.
Yeah, but you think about how much damage do you want this to do? I mean, more than 6, right?
More than 3, that's for sure.
More than 3. I actually think more than 6.
Yeah,
like Fiery
5 to 6.
Confluence or like some of these other ones like feel like you need to get a really good value out of it.
Fiery Confluence, by the way, is 2 red, and it does 1,000 different things.
I know.
So Calibrate Blast.
And it does
Blast.
6 to each opponent too.
Yeah, exactly. And it can kill, it can wipe the board usually. So I don't know. Calibrated Blast is calibrated to not be so good. Sorry. Whoever named it was like, that's why I didn't name it.
Well, it's very
like that.
All right. Next up, we have Obsidian Charmaw. 3 red for a 4/4 dragon. This spell costs 1 less to cast for each land your opponents control that could produce a colorless mana.
Okay.
It has flying. It's a dragon.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Obsidian Charmaw enters the battlefield, destroy target non-basic land an opponent controls.
Nice. So this is almost always going to cost at 3 mana, I think.
Like, I think so too.
I think just 2 red mana.
I think that if you are curving out with this, it'll cost 3 or 4 pretty reliably.
Yeah.
But then later in the game as a top deck, like you got a 2 mana 4/4 for sure.
2 mana 4/4 flyer is actually pretty relevant. It's something that can block and attack really efficiently. And the effect of destroying a target non-basic land is in fact, I think every single deck needs to run these days.
I think so too. And, you know, we have cards like Goblin Settlers, which is, by the way, expensive. We have Avalanche Riders, which doesn't give you the body you're looking for. And so those are cards that are pretty played. And Obsidian Charmaw has a better body, can be cast cheaper.
Yeah.
It seems to like outperform these other land destruction cards on a lot of different levels. Now, this is not designed to mana screw people. You know, I think that's the new design that Wizards has, not to be able to just take out your basic land or something like that, or play it so quickly that it keeps you from being off of your lands. So
right.
I actually like that in terms of a mechanical thing. Like, I'm not trying to mana screw you. I'm trying to get rid of your guy's cradle.
And I think if you are running a dragon deck, this is like one of those staple dragons you want to put in because it's got a great ETB ability. Mm-hmm. And again, non-basic land destruction, there is going to almost always be a land, I think, in most like semi-powerful tables that is doing a lot of work.
Yeah.
And people are going to look at it and go like, man, that's wow, that land is killing it. That Cabal Coffers that someone popped.
That Urza Saga.
That Urza Saga.
That taps for colorless. Gaia's that makes it
Cradle,
cheaper.
The Phyrexian Tower, right? Oh. There's tons of different lands out there that do have value.
The Tower of the Magistrate, get out of there.
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of good reasons to run this, even if you're in a deck that doesn't care about dragons. It could just be red, blow up a land, get a 4-4 flyer.
Great.
If your deck likes any of those, any part of that sentence, consider running it in your red deck. All right, next up we got Chef's Kiss. Mwah. This is Asmo around the Marlica Destin. Cool to car.
Asmo's good.
Asmo, yeah, Asmo's very nice. All right, so Chef's Kiss is one red for an instant. Gain control of target spell that targets only a single permanent or player. Copy it, then reselect the targets at random for the spell and the copy. The new targets can't be you or a permanent you control. Okay, there's a lot of text here. So this is specifically able to target spells that only target a single permanent or player. So a lightning bolt to the face is a single spell targeting a single player. A path to exile on a single creature is the similar thing. This doesn't target a spell on the stack. This doesn't target a spell that targets multiple things. It has to be targeting only a single permanent. And then you copy it, so you cast it again, and then you reselect targets at random for the original spell and the copy, but they're random. So you get it goes two different ways.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's pretty interesting, I think. So it feels like a counterspell, you know, because I think that the most obvious case scenario is that I'm trying to kill your creature.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Sorted,
like, I'm trying to get rid of something.
Just get rid of it. Right.
And then you're like, no, I'm going to protect. I'm going to sort of counter that ability, but then I'm going to just kind of wreak havoc on other parts of the table. The randomness means that you don't have complete control of it. It's not like a redirect or like a deflecting swat or something like that,
right,
that you have other times. But sometimes in red, it doesn't matter. It's just protection from you and you don't care where it goes, you know?
Yeah. So if it was a path that was targeting creature, you'd have to select new legal targets for it. This is going to be a bit of a nightmare because let's say there are 13.
Well, just imagine you said Vindicate a second ago, right?
Right.
So oh, right. Vindicate can hit any permanent, which includes lands.
So you have to count up everything on the board and select one at random somehow.
Get your phone out.
You need to get a phone and you need to sit there and count every permanent and then know what order you count them in and then enter it into your phone and go like, all right, between 1 and 37, what number is going to come up? And then count it again and figure out that one. All right, now do it again for the second spell. Mm-hmm. But this was only creatures, so only count the creatures and then do this. So Chef's Kiss is kind of a nightmare to resolve.
Yeah, I think it's going to be annoying, especially with cards like the Vindicate you mentioned, like Beast Within that can hit anything.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
You know, Chaos Warp will be funny.
Yep. It's going to be interesting if you do play this, but you're right. It's kind of like a red counterspell, and it's not expensive to cast. It's one red.
I think that if you have things that you know you want to protect, this can be another way to protect your board. One thing that is makes me feel a little bit bad, though, is that you need to have legal targets. So let's say that you play your commander, and the commander's the only creature on the battlefield, you know, and someone goes to Path to Exile it, you can't Chef's Kiss that because there's no way to reselect that Path to Exile.
Oh, I see. Interesting. Yeah. So that is very interesting. So you kind of have to have a fuller board for this to work.
Yeah. By the way, this is something that you might want to wait for Wizards of the Coast to confirm this kind of stuff because a lot of judges are arguing about the term reselect. It's actually really funny to go online and like have people try to understand exactly what Chef's Kiss does. It's those little corner cases in Magic that are really exciting.
Yeah. The word reselect is different than what it used to be. You wrote a great point, which is how often you play Wild Ricochet, which is two red for an instant, and says you may choose new targets for target instant or sorcery spell, then copy that spell. You may choose new targets for the copy. Doesn't have the word reselect in there anywhere.
Yeah, but Wild Ricochet might have more use cases. Like, say someone's targeting themselves with a draw spell.
Ah.
Wild Ricochet can sort of let you steal that and then copy it and take advantage of that. You have more control over what's going on. Chef's Kiss could interrupt that card draw as well because it is, you know, a spell that targets only a single target or player, but then you don't get those cards. You just have those cards randomly going around.
Right. Actually, in fact, if someone did target themselves with the draw spell and you Chef's Kissed it, this spell, Chef's Kiss says the new targets can't be you or a permanent you control.
Yeah, so they could just go back to two other players or something like that. So like that use case scenario doesn't really work.
Yeah, Chef's Kiss is definitely an interesting spell. I think because of how narrow it can be and also how complicated it is, we're not going to see much of this. You're going to see the wild ricochet type effects much, much more.
Yeah, I was really excited about it. And being one full mana cheaper is good.
Yeah.
And so I think that I'll play this in maybe political decks. Not political decks per se, but maybe
chaos-y.
Like chaos-y yeah. sort of wild decks. Because those effects can be really fun. And I think sometimes it can be fun to be like, all right, let's go. Let's get the dice out. Let's figure out what's dying. And so
just
that can
be prepared
cool.
to resolve it.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
All right. Next up, we have an interesting uncommon enchantment called Flame Blitz. It is a single red mana for an enchantment that reads, at the beginning of your end step, Flame Blitz deals 5 damage to each planeswalker.
Hmm.
And okay. it has cycling for 2.
Okay, not bad. So this is interesting. This, goodbye, Super Friends.
It's got to just destroy Super Friends, right? It's an enchantment. It sticks around on the battlefield. You play it, and it immediately... does 5 damage to all of them. That's a lot.
Yeah.
And then
most planeswalkers would just, by the way, die the moment Flame Blitz hits the table. And then no one was ever going to be able to play another one again.
It's just going to do it at the end of every turn. It's just going to like
your turn. Kill. Yeah. Your turns. Yeah.
It's so cheap. It's 1 red mana that prevents all the planeswalkers from being out there. And then
the best part, it says cycling too.
Yeah. You just cycle. If there's no planeswalkers, you just cycle it away.
Yeah. Because I think even by itself, if this just read destroy 1 target planeswalker for 1 red mana, you would play it. As long as you're not running planeswalkers, because someone has one out, you can't swing in for them. Like oftentimes people now play planeswalkers with a little bit of protection, so it's hard to get in for damage. 1 Flame Blitz, 1 red mana to get rid of it almost assuredly, that's pretty good.
I'm actually a little bit annoyed that this exists, because it really does hose planeswalker decks so badly.
You have one?
I do have a planeswalker deck. Yeah, do you have one?
No, but I'm putting Flame Blitz in my new deck.
No!
No, I do have a Super Friends deck as well, and Flame Blitz is one of those cards. You know, obviously it has to be on their turn. They have to have it. They haven't cycled it away. But it is just a single card that destroys an entire archetype.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
It is... Yeah, it's cool. I'm just wondering if it's very good. I'm just wondering if a lot of people are going to include it just because, oh yeah, it's a good card. Like even when there's no planeswalker decks in your meta.
It's going to be hard. I mean, I'm always pressed to get my card list down to 100 cards every single time I build a deck. Yeah. And unless my friends are constantly running planeswalkers, or I just have issues with it, or maybe my deck is just one that doesn't have creatures, so it can't get rid of planeswalkers and it likes the cycling ability, then yeah, I could play a Flame Blitz. I could see it. I could see it, especially in like my Asmo deck, because you're trying to discard cards to cast Asmo, and cycling is a discard of a card. So
yeah, I can see that too. I think that it'd be interesting to just keep conscious in your mind, like, okay, like I'm playing Commander now. How many planeswalkers am I seeing?
Right.
You know what I mean? And just kind of like be aware of your meta and figure out how big of a problem planeswalkers are. Because
the planeswalkers might not be a problem
at all.
Yeah, they just play a card and they're like, this is just to draw me cards, and it goes down to 0 loyalty, and you're like, okay, that's fine.
Yeah, one Narset activation that then dies from a creature.
Yeah.
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 All right.
All right. Next up, we have the Red Fury Evoke Cycle. So it's called Fury. The other ones all have single, like, emotional names like Subtlety.
Grief.
Good grief. This one is Fury. 3 red for a 3/3 creature elemental incarnation. It has double strike. And when Fury enters the battlefield, it deals 4 damage divided as you choose among any number of target creatures and or planeswalkers. And of course, like the other cards in the Evoke cycle, you can evoke this card and play it by exiling a red card from your hand. So technically, you can cast this for 0 mana if you have another red card in your hand. You exile it, and Fury comes onto the battlefield evoked.
Note, it doesn't have flash like some of the others, so not at instant speed. So yeah. This is not like a... it doesn't reach that same level as Solitude that you could do it at instant speed.
Yep.
Whereas this one, it has to be sort of on your turn.
Yep. This is a 5 mana 3/3 double strike as a creature.
That's
which
pretty
is,
good body.
Yeah, it's a good body for sure. I don't think it's as relevant in Commander.
I think the double strike is more relevant than a lot of the other things like flying's pretty good.
It's more,
you know what I mean, like
lifelink
and some other stuff.
It's more relevant than vigilance, I think. The real question is how many things is this going to kill when you play it in your play group? So it's 4 damage divided as you choose among any number of target creatures and or planeswalkers, probably creatures. There are always 1 toughness creatures around, so you can definitely kill at least one of those.
I think 1.5 things.
Yeah, 1.5 to 2 things.
I think if you get 2 things, you're really happy. But for the most of the part, I think you're going to get either 1 thing or 2 things. Very rarely are you going to get three things out of this.
Yeah, and sometimes you'll get none things too. One of the reasons that damage is so tough in red is because their removal is based on dealing damage to stuff. And it doesn't get to just say destroy target creature. It's destroy this creature if their toughness happens to match up with how much damage you can do to it. So Fury, I think, is actually not as amazing in Commander, but it is still going to be a decent card and it will do work when you play it.
Yeah, like this coming onto the battlefield and killing an Eternal Witness and a Mull Drifter is fine, but like those cards already got their value.
Correct.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so I think that a lot of times the smaller utility creatures that we have are gaining their value just by entering the battlefield.
Yeah.
And not necessarily, like having them stick around doesn't matter. So you can't be like, okay, well, I took out those two creatures. It's like, well, you know, you took out part of their 3-for-1 or part of their 2-for-1. You know
I always use like Oracle of Moldiah as a good example.
Oh man, I would love to take out Oracle of Moldiah.
Seedborn Muse, right? So like, I think Fury, you're going to want to play this in decks that can really actually maximize its damage. And so you had a great point here. You know, it's an odd number card, so Obosh the Preypiercer likes it.
Good.
Torbrin, Thane of Red Fell, if you're just trying to do damage, Fury seems like a very good card in that deck.
Oh man, it's red. It has double strike. Actually, like, if you can play into the fact that it does have double strike, that then you can sort of make it bigger. You can make the body more relevant because the 4 damage is not as relevant, right?
Yeah.
So you need to be using the body too. And so decks like that Torbrand deck, maybe like Xenagos God of Rebels to be able to like pump it up really big and deal that damage.
And it gives it trample as well. So double strike damage with trample is very good, especially if this thing becomes like a 7-3 or whatever, you know? It'd be very hard to block and they'll be taking a lot of damage from it.
I think that people aren't going to be tricked by this by evoking this as often because you have to do it on your turn. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they're going to see that like, oh, if I 2-for-1 myself to take out 2 permanents of my opponents that are small creatures, it's like, am I really getting the trade-off I'm looking for?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think you'll probably end up casting Fury a lot. And in a tight spot, let's say you just need to clear a blocker out of the way with your Xenagos deck, then evoking it, getting that huge damage in is going
to
be worth it.
Yeah, like you mentioned, I might 2-for-1 myself to get rid of your Oracle Moldiah.
Yeah, or I'll 2-for-1 for myself if I can then know I'll swing in for like 15 damage That's or 16 true. Damage and yeah. just do a ton to you, yeah.
All right, next we have Harmonic Prodigy. 1 and a red for a 1/3 human wizard with prowess. If an ability of a shaman or another wizard you control triggers, that ability triggers an additional time.
Okay, so this is Shaman Harmonicon, Wizard Harmonicon.
Doubling up things is always powerful.
Yeah.
Like, we know that getting twice as much out of your other cards that you want to play anyways are good. This is just narrow. Wizards, Shaman.
Yeah, and it needs to specifically be an ability triggering on that creature, as opposed to something like Kiki-Jiki, which is a shaman, but has an activated ability. So Harmonic Prodigy doesn't, those two don't synchronize very well there.
Not triggered. Or basically an ability of a shaman, it's of the shaman or the wizard, so it's not like the creature entering the battlefield causes Purphoros to trigger, something like that.
Oh, I see, yeah.
Because there are things that double up all the triggers, you know what I mean? And this is a very narrow ability.
Yeah, I like, you wrote down Judith the Scourge Diva, seems like a great place for this, which says whenever a non-token creature you control dies, Judith does 1 damage to any target.
So Judith does the damage, she is a shaman.
That happening twice seems pretty good.
Anala, Archmage Ritualist, Naban, Dean of Iteration, Adelise, the Cinderwind,
right.
All of these are wizards and they're legendary wizards that, you know, that basically do something similar to that. They either value the wizards enter the battlefield effects or they double it up themselves. Like,
yeah.
They're just solid wizard cards. I think that if you're playing wizards deck, you give this a try and you see how many, you know, abilities you get out of it.
Yeah, look through your deck, look at your wizards, see which ones have abilities that trigger. Otherwise,
you need a lot of wizards.
Yeah, I mean, generally the Wizards decks are running mostly Wizards. Now, maybe this works really well in a Changeling deck that has a lot of Changelings that have triggered abilities, but I don't even know if that's a thing.
I would like someone to research that for me.
Yeah, Shaman Tribal, though, you also wrote down what might be fun. Kervik the Merciless with the Harmonic Prodigy out. That
is such a good one. I love it so much.
Okay, let's move on to the Glimpse of Tomorrow. It's a sorcery with suspend for 3. So this is in the suspend cycle. Again, you're trading time for mana because you're paying red now, and in 3 turns, it's going to be able to cast for no mana. So let's see how powerful this ability is. Shuffle all permanents you own into your library, then reveal that many cards from the top of your library. Put all non-aura permanent cards revealed this way onto the battlefield, then do the same for aura cards, then put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. So permanents are the ones that are coming back. If you flip in instant or sorcery, those are going to go onto the bottom of your library. If you have aura enchantments, those will come on after your permanents enter so they can still enchant something. This is interesting. It's pretty big. It's Warp World, right?
It is Warp World. It is only Warp World for you rather than Warp World for the entire table.
Oh.
I don't know if that... I actually like that more because sometimes Warp World feels like an exhausting exercise for everyone.
And also someone might just get bonked after it and be like, I flipped no lands and a couple of bad things.
I have spells, yeah.
Yeah,
I got the spells deck.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and it does kind of become a card that's... that randomly in someone's game rather than something that you planned out. So I don't like just that effect. But the idea that you can build your deck to take advantage of Glimpse of Tomorrow or your own personal Warp World sounds cool.
Yeah, and the Great Aurora is one of our original preview cards in the Command Zone, does a very similar thing. This does not cost that much, right? It's red, suspend three, and maybe in that time period, what you're trying to do is just put as many permanents on the battlefield as possible.
Absolutely. Like, the Warp World is 8 mana value, the Great Aurora is 9 mana value.
Yeah.
This does not even compare to those as well. Like, you suspend this on 2 or even 3 or 4, 3 turns later, you do not have 9 mana.
Yeah, and then the question is, does your deck want to do that with 7 permanents on the battlefield? Especially if you run the risk of not flipping over lands, or you flip over more spells than creatures and permanents.
Yeah, I think you want a lot of permanents, right, in this kind of deck. And I think you want a lot of permanents that put more permanents onto the battlefield. Something like, I don't know, a Siege Gang Commander.
Okay.
That's 5 bodies. 5 mana, 5 bodies. Glimpse of Tomorrow will get you 5 real permanents.
Yeah.
That's like... even if that's 5 lands, if that's 5 utility creatures, that is a great deal.
Yeah, if you're playing a Krenko deck, now if you've made 1,000 goblins, maybe you're just winning because of that. But imagine, you know, flipping 30 goblins into your deck and then shuffling up.
I mean, we've talked about this goblin a couple times, Dockside Extortionist.
Oh yeah.
Very, very expensive card, but like, you know that you could generate a ton of treasures. Like, we've talked about treasure generation and clue generation and food generation over and over again, and it feels like you could just have a stack of these artifacts on the battlefield. What if you turn them into real cards?
My judgment, though, is that suspend 3 and the fact that you, right, like, you, this, people see this coming from a mile away. If they board wipe before you get to the end of your suspend,
you're down a card, and then you are taking the chance of your lands like becoming... I mean, what if you, this was just your lands?
I like that. That'd be interesting, because let's say you don't need your lands anymore, you've got your board set up. But again, suspend 3 gives everyone 3 turns to see what's trying to happen. And I mean, again, someone might just incidentally board wipe or play a Vandal Blast or play a whatever that gets rid of all your stuff.
But what if it's fine? Like, all your stuff gets gone. They basically use a bunch of resources to get rid of a bunch of tokens and bad stuff. So that's like, or not bad stuff, but not really worth a card.
Okay.
You know, and they've used real cards to do that. And then you warp world, you Glimpse of Tomorrow, just your mana base, just like 6 lands.
I don't think that's great, because what about your hand? Let's say you have cards in your hand you need to play that cost 5-6 mana, and then you only flip 2 lands off of this thing.
You're absolutely right, and it could definitely...
you're out of luck.
It could definitely put you out of luck, but you could flip into something... kiddo. But you could also flip into something... I know. Here's the thing. If you could flip into something good, but then you have a deck that's built to put, like, with Siege Gang Commander and put in a bunch of tokens and a bunch of other small things on the battlefield, odds are you're going to hit more of those things.
Yeah, so I think you have to really build around this. If you're the kind of person that plays Warp World, then maybe you're the kind of person that wants to have a Glimpse of Tomorrow.
I think I'm gonna try it in a deck or two.
I would love to see it, and let me know and let the world know how it works out. All right, those are the red cards. What do we think?
Yeah, I'm not really thrilled about the red cards. Even I actually think that the best card on there is the Flame Blitz.
Really?
And it's an uncommon.
I like Obsidian Charmaw, just its land destruction.
Yeah, you're right. That's a good one.
Maybe too. Harmonic Prodigy will see a lot of play down the line in certain decks, but yeah, it's not great.
Yeah, it's not a very deep color. And even the cards that are on there, like, I agree that Charmaw is good, but it's like,
yeah,
it's just blow up your land kind of thing. It's not something exciting to me.
It's not Esper Sentinel.
Okay.
I'm judging everything by
Esper. I'm excited about Glimpse of Tomorrow. That's okay. Good. I'll do that.
I'm going to try and do a Glimpse of Tomorrow and see whether or not you're succeeding with it. Oh, you took a big risk, DJ. it did not turn out in your favor. Actually, who knows? I can't glimpse tomorrow, so let us know how it works. Okay, when we come back, though, we're going to talk about all the cards in green, as well as a few extras that are multicolored, but have green as one of the primary colors. So don't go anywhere, and here is something from our mid-roll sponsors. Welcome back, everyone. This is Modern Horizons 2 time, and we are talking about the red and green cards in the 99.
Red didn't impress us very much. No. Hopefully green can do that. I don't know. Green has been, like, historically not that great.
Yeah, green is, like, one of the worst colors in Magic. They never give it any
Commander,
favors.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Well, we'll see.
Let's start off
With a common,
Abundant Harvest. One green for a sorcery. Choose land or non-land. Reveal cards from the top of your library until you reveal a card of the chosen kind. Put that card into your hand and the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order.
Okay, interesting. So a big shout out to Abundance, which is an enchantment that does this, but for every card you draw, you can choose that and then draw that into your hand. This is fun. You this are is guaranteed to draw a card off of this.
Yeah, this is just, and draw the thing that you want. This is just a little baby cantrip. If you like Preordain and Ponder and things like that, maybe mostly Preordained or stuff like that, then you will like this because it basically helps fix you when you need to be fixed. It gets you the land that you need, or it gets you the spell that you need. Honestly, this will probably be a staple in a lot of decks.
Yeah, I could see this being very easily played, especially if you're just, right, like, let's say you are a Lands Matter deck, but at a certain point you want to stop drawing lands, or you need to draw that landfall card. Abundant Harvest, for the low, low cost of just a green mana, is going to guarantee that you hit that thing on your next draw when you cast this. So
it smooths everything out.
It does smooth your draw. Yeah.
Honestly, this is the type of card that makes your Commander games better, because like it prevents Flood and Screw, and those are two ways to really like not enjoy yourself. And so people need to play more of these cards. And if you are super, like if you're really one about min-maxing, like you can reduce your land count with enough cards like Abundant Harvest, because it insulates you from mana
a little bit. I don't recommend it. Lands are my enemy. But a lot of people don't play Abundance because it's a 4-mana enchantment. It takes a while to get down, and you have to wait to draw a card for it to trigger.
It doesn't replace itself. It replaces your draw step.
Right,
so you need to get enough value by saying non-land when you... Basically, when there's a land on top and you say non-land, that's when it kind of replaces itself.
Yeah.
This cantrip immediately replaces itself with a real card in the card that you want.
Yeah. So I could see this game played a lot. It's just a very solid common. Be on the lookout for it. All right. Next up, we have the Evoke card. But for green, this one is called Endurance. One green for a 3/4 creature elemental incarnation. This one does have flash, and it also has reach. And it says, when Endurance enters the battlefield, up to one target player puts all the cards from their graveyard on the bottom of their library in a random order. And of course, like all the other ones, you can evoke this card and play it for free by exiling a green card from your hand. Okay, this is a little better than the red one, for sure, I think, because graveyard hate is pretty important.
Yeah, graveyard hate is important. I do think that the body on this is clearly the best. 3 mana, 3/4 reach, flash.
Yeah.
Like, this is ambush material right here. But you're less likely to ambush people in our format versus other ones where, you know, flashing this in at 3 mana and getting a creature death could be really good.
And you can do this in response very specifically to someone saying, I'm going to do this from my graveyard, or I'm going to cast this reap and get all these cards back. And be like, no, you're not. Whereas a card like Bajuka Bog, which is sort of seen as the typical catch-all graveyard hoser, doesn't come in until it's your turn and you can play a land. So instant speed is important here. The fact that it's just one green makes it a lot easier to cast than Fury, which is like 3 red-red. So you may not need to even evoke this all the time.
Yeah, hopefully you don't, because you really need to interrupt someone pretty substantially to want to get rid of this and another card.
I mean, and at the same time, if you pass the turn and you are holding up this mana at the end of your turn, when it comes back to you, you've done nothing and haven't cast it, you probably just end up casting this and choosing a graveyard that's going to get affected, because you can't sit around with graveyard hate and wait for someone to give you the perfect opportunity to hose them.
Yeah.
So this is one of those cards where I think it's good. If you already have a few sources of graveyard hate that synergize well with your deck, you may not need it. But if you're in mono green, or if you're in a green deck that just needs this and you like the body as well, and maybe you want the blocker, having a reach is actually, I think, pretty significant. Again, stops you from like getting pecked away at by little 1/1s that are flying, which seem to be everywhere in the format these days.
Yeah. I think it's fine. I'm not super excited about the graveyard interaction on this. I prefer stuff that takes out all the graveyards or things that actively keep you from getting stuff in the graveyard, because those shut down those graveyard decks a little bit more.
Apparently in CEDH, this is being seen as a potential stopper against Thassa's Oracle, because you can stop them from...
So in the I can see that. In the right meta, this just becomes game-winning, right?
Right. It's, you know, they're trying to empty their library with Thassa's Oracle, and now Endurance comes in and shuffles it back into their library. And apparently some Yisan lists run Loaming Shaman for the same effect. So you could also Yisan into as well.
Okay, so basically this feels super powerful in a very narrow amount of ways. So I can definitely see how there's a lot of play. Thassa's Oracle, like, you got me with that one. That's awesome.
Yeah. Okay, all right. Moving on.
Next up we have Chatterstorm, 1 green for a common sorcery that says, create a 1/1 green squirrel token, creature token. Storm.
So when you cast a spell, copy it for each spell cast before this turn. If before I cast a Chatterstorm, I cast a Soul Ring and then Chatterstorm, I would make two copies of it because it's first and second. Interesting. So Chatterstorm is unfortunately a sorcery, but this is a way to get a bunch of squirrels onto the token. It could be a green storm finisher.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's, here's the thing. You need a lot of spells to have this be a finisher. Like we've seen with things like Empty the Warrens, that like, you need a lot of spells in Commander to be able to get this wide enough, big enough to be able to go off. I think that you need to play this if you're happy getting 5 squirrels.
Okay, yeah, that seems fine.
Because that's a lot of hoops. 5 squirrels? Are you kidding me?
That's three. That's like
4 spells in this one?
4 spells in that one?
That's hard.
That is really hard. Yeah. So the fact that this isn't an instant as well means you can't cast it on someone else's end step after they've cast a few spells. So you're going to have to use this yourself. But look, the squirrel deck's got a lot of love this set, and this is one of those cards that can definitely at least pump out 3 squirrels, I think, on the
turn. And honestly, if you're running a squirrel deck, you're going to run the squirrel cards. Speaking of which...
Yep, the next one is Chitter Spitter. This is 2 green for an artifact. I can't believe the squirrels built this. How smart.
They're pretty brilliant squirrels.
Yeah, amazing. At the beginning of your upkeep, you may sacrifice a token. If you do, put an acorn counter on Chitter Spitter. Squirrels you control get +1/+1 for each acorn counter on Chitter Spitter. You can also pay a green and tap this artifact to create a 1/1 green squirrel creature token. Okay, so on your upkeep, you can sacrifice a token. Could be anything. Could be a clue token, a treasure token, or a squirrel token, or a spirit, whatever. You get an acorn counter, and then if you have a squirrel out, it gets lorded. It gets bumped up. Wow.
So lords are great. You know, this definitely has some upkeep that you have to keep working on it, and you need to have something else to synergize with it. Because
still is a May ability, so you don't have to do it. Which is nice.
But you want to. You want to get this. Like, you want a lot of. By the way, do you go out and get acorns to like put on this to keep track?
I should.
Like real acorns.
We had little acorns for the last time. I think Olivia played a squirrel deck, and so they're somewhere sitting around the set.
So definitely, you need little acorns on that.
Yeah, if you're making the squirrel deck, you should probably be going all out.
By the way, there are other squirrel synergies in this. So if you are playing a squirrel deck, just look at all the squirrels, because there's like Squirrel Sovereign in here that's just a squirrel lord. And you don't need us to tell you that these cards are good in squirrel decks. Yeah. And that's where I think that this belongs. There's a little bit of play that it could have outside of squirrel decks, just because it's its own engine. But it's a pretty weak engine, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think, like, look, you're going to want to have a bunch of squirrels out. If you have Proliferate in your deck, maybe that's really good because you can add up the acorn counters. But you don't, you know, in a token deck, I could see this as a lower powered token producer, because at the very least, you can make squirrels and maybe they're 2/2s and 3/3s and they get bigger and bigger, and you can sacrifice your useless 1/1 that doesn't do anything for these little squirrels that are going to keep getting buffer and buffer.
But I mean, we've seen Imperious Perfect in elf decks do something really similar and be very good in elf decks. And so I think that this will be very good in squirrel decks.
Yeah. I mean, this is, I feel like, one of the biggest auto include for squirrel decks at this point.
Absolutely.
So if you're doing it, pay attention. Congrats.
All right. Here. Next up, we have another one of our suspend cycle. It might be one of the more powerful ones. It's Gaia's Will. It has no casting cost, but you can suspend it for 4 turns for only a single green mana.
4 turns?
4 turns is
the highest suspend yet.
Yeah. Until end of turn, you may play lands and cast spells from your graveyard.
Oh.
If a card would be put into your graveyard from anywhere this turn, exile that card instead.
Okay, so this is a card called Yawgmoth's Will, which
Yawgmoth's Will.
Pretty expensive, but it's 2 and a black instead of green. It's over $300. It's in 9,000 decks, considered a CEDH staple. It's on the reserve list, all that stuff. This is guys will suspend 4 though.
Okay. So let's look at why Yogg's will is powerful, and then let's find out if Gaia's will does the same thing.
Okay.
Okay. Yogg's will can be, I'm going to abbreviate it to Yogg's will because we're going to be talking about it a lot. Yogg's will can be used in combo decks really heavily because you can, it lets you play your most critical spells twice.
Yep.
A lot of times in singleton formats, you want to be able to get those cards back again. Sometimes you can play other powerful spells like Lion's Eye Diamond because your graveyard becomes your entire hand again.
Yeah.
So sometimes it opens up other strategies too.
You can replay the Lion's Eye Diamond after
yeah.
you sacrificed it. You have your dark rituals. You have ways once you cast that Yogg's will, you're going to be able to get a lot of mana.
Yes. So you have ways to generate mana. You have ways to just basically open up the opportunity for single big turns because you have access to your entire graveyard mm-hmm. over again. And that's where we see Yogg's will being really powerful is in those single big turns
mm-hmm.
because a lot of times it opens up a lot of options to be able to win the game right there because you expanded your hand size to everything in your graveyard. And if you're casting it in this in your deck, odds are it's something your deck wants to do.
Yeah.
So Guy that's as well, how,
however.
Yeah, that's how Yogg's will is usually used. People do play value Yogg's will though. I mean,
just to get like a couple of extra spells.
3 mana, play a land, play a spell.
Sure. Maybe another
one. Is that the powerful way to use Yogg's will?
No. And if you're, I mean, Yogg's will has such a high price point because it is one of those cards that says, I'm going to win the game this turn if I'm able to resolve this. Guy's will with suspend 4, I think it's just way too long to wait for this. And you're going to be playing it as a value Guy's will most of the time. Or someone's going to look at you and go, that card is terrifying. I'm afraid you're going to win. I'm going to try and remove you so you can't cast it.
Yeah. So the fact that the way that people use Yogg's will is to win the game means that people are going to be frightened of Guy's will.
Right.
Super frightened. And the fact that people can see it coming means they can interrupt with your graveyard. I mean, they could just shuffle your graveyard back into your library. They can do things to you, like kill you in that amount of time.
Or just counter the guy's will when it comes down because they know it's coming in 4 turns, unless 4 you can get rid turns. Of the counter somehow. Yeah.
Yeah. So like as a win the game engine, this is not great unless you're cheating into play. It could actually be good as just a value like thing. Like basically, If people weren't scared of this, if it was just 1 mana in 4 turns, I get a cool regrowth and play a land from the battlefield, I would actually play that. But I think the downside of people being frightened of the powerful nature of the spell does not balance out the value you get from 2 or 3 spells from it.
And you can't draw this on turn 7 or 8 and play it and hope to cast it typically.
No
games
way.
Are gonna be over by 10 or 11 that we've seen on average. And so that's another big dig against all of these suspend cards.
Yeah,
so
only good in the early game, way too telegraphed. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to one of the more exciting cards of the set.
I'm excited. It's Sanctum Weaver. 1 and a green for a 0/2 enchantment creature dryad. You can tap it to add X mana of any one color where X is the number of enchantments you control.
All right. So shout out to Sarah's Sanctum, where the Sanctum Weaver is presumably from.
Oh my gosh.
Which is an extremely expensive land now. It's on the reserve list. It's in 4,000 decks because it's the guy's cradle, but for enchantments.
$380 for that land. That's crazy. But now you have a mana dork that does it for you.
Yay.
And it's an enchantment itself. So so it automatically is going to tap for 1 no matter what,
mm-hmm.
because it's an enchantment, it counts itself, but also it's going to trigger all of your other enchantment stuff. You're going to be able to search it out with enchantment search effects. It's going to count like other things too. So you play it and it triggers your enchantresses.
Right.
You know, you protect it with your Sterling Grove and stuff like that. Like it's amazing. And if you're in an enchantment deck, this is a new staple. You can't not include it. It's fantastic.
This is an absolute staple in any enchantment deck, even if you're only getting 3-4 mana out of this because you just have enchantments.
Only 3 or 4 mana on a 2-drop.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Pretty solid. This is one of those cards I think is it's a great chance to get a Sarah Sanctum effect without needing to, go broke doing so. So I actually like this quite a bit.
By the way, if you ever have creatures that produce more than 3 mana, a lot of times there's infinite combo potential with that.
Right.
You know, there's equipment that lets you untap it for 3 mana,
then you tap it
again and you generate infinite mana. So that's something to keep in mind. We're not minimizing that, but this can it's just a great dork.
Yep. It is of any one color, so that it also can tap for all 5 of the colors. So
I know, it just works. Fixes you too.
Yeah, so it seems like a really solid card. There's not much else to say about it other than it's good. Okay, next up, we're back in Squirrel World. It's Scurry Oak. Two and a green for a 1/2 creature tree folk with evolve. So whenever a creature enters the battlefield under your control, if that creature has a greater power or toughness than this creature, put a +1/+1 counter on this creature. So it's a 1/2. And then also says, whenever one or more +1/+1 counters are put on Scurry Oak, you may create a 1/1 green squirrel creature token. All right. So if you bring a 2/2 on the battlefield, the 2 is higher than the power. It gets +1/+1 counter. Scurry Oak becomes a 2/3. And one or more counters were put on it, you create a 1/1 green squirrel creature token.
Nice. By the way, that play pattern is pretty good, actually. Like 3 mana, 2/3 comes with a 1/1 body. Mm-hmm. And all you have to do is just play another creature after it. That is actually fine. But we can see that a lot of combo potential becomes unlocked with this. We have cards like Ivy Lane Denison, where whenever a green creature enters the battlefield under your control, you can put a +1/+1 counter wherever you want. Mm-hmm. I'm going to put it on the Scurry Oak. It creates a green creature. It triggers Ivy Lane Denison to get a put a +1/+1 counter. I'm going to put it on Scurry Oak.
Cathar's Crusade, putting +1/+1 counters all over the place, and then creature enters, and then you're going to put a +1/+1 counter all over the place. Very nice.
By the way, it has evolve on it, and so if you put in big enough creatures, it'll keep triggering it.
Right.
You can also make the squirrel that you put, that it itself puts in, big enough. So like Coat of Arms, if you have enough squirrels starting off, then the squirrel that comes in is going to be bigger than the power of this Scurry Oak, and it's going to trigger putting another squirrel in, which by the way is pumped up from all the other squirrels with Coat of Arms, and so it triggers mm-hmm. evolve again, and so you just get in this big chain. By the way, all of these chains don't just draw the game, because it says you may create a 1/1 green squirrel creature token. So a lot of these would have drawn the game, and it's just like, Scurry Oak isn't even in, even there. But you can stop at any time. As soon as you make this infinitely large squirrel army, you're just like, okay, I'll stop now. 32. Yeah. Whatever you're going to stop at, 32 billion.
32 billion, yeah. 70 trillion.
Okay, good. That's a good one.
Arbitrarily large number. Also, Gave decks, Atraxa, any decks that like +1/+1 counters. Scurry Oak seems like a very fun thing to put your Ozolith things on or whatever. Just dump counters onto it. You're going to get some value off it, but
move
obviously...
move a counter every turn, yeah.
Yeah, obviously this is better in those Cathar's Crusade type decks. They're going wide. You have a reason to use the tokens, and you have a way to constantly sort of take use of adding more on.
Uncommon, too.
Yeah, uncommon.
Right? I love that. All right, next up, we have Sylvan Anthem. Green, green for an enchantment. Green creatures you control get +1/+1. Whenever a green creature enters the battlefield under your control, scry one.
Okay, so green creatures you control get +1/+1. Again, we've been talking about squirrels all episode, so this is a lord for all of your green creatures. Obviously, much better in a mono-green deck than a non-mono-green deck. I think for green-green, that's actually a pretty cheap universal enchantment for you, but it's specifically green creatures.
Yeah, it is pretty cheap. We usually see anthems a little bit more expensive, but here's the thing. We've seen this effect in white Crusade. It was banned in 2020, but it is white-white to give +1/+1 to all white creatures.
Right.
Not played.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't see how this could theoretically play just because it's color shifted, unless it's that scry. Do you think that scry changes anything?
I like the scry a bit, especially if you're pumping out squirrels every single turn, because then you're scrying multiple times and maybe you have some cards that like that top deck manipulation of it. So I think that scry is the only thing that I'm really like, wow, that could be nice.
Yeah, I've actually liked that on Lifecrafter's Bestiary, which mm-hmm. also has a scry component onto it. Obviously, it lets you draw cards. I think drawing cards is better than +1/+1. But I think that the scry does matter, because we have so many cards in green that like that top deck manipulation, like Oracle of Moldiah.
Yes. You want to have lands on top so you can play them. Very nice.
Yeah, like Vizier of the Menagerie, Vivian, Monster's Advocate.
Playing creatures on top as well, yeah.
Moving those around, yeah.
Yeah, I could definitely see this doing very well in a mono-green deck. Again, a lot of the green cards we talked about are better in mono green than other ones, but I like it. I like it a bit.
Yeah.
But it's not amazing, and I think you just have to have a critical mass of green creatures to get the scry ability out of it too.
Yeah.
Okay, next up we got Timeless Witness. This is 2 green green for a 2/1 creature human shaman. When Timeless Witness enters the battlefield, return target card from your graveyard to your hand. Sounds like Eternal Witness. But this one's timeless because it also has the ability Eternalize on it.
Ooh.
So basically, if this is in the graveyard, you pay 5 green green, you exile the card, and you create a copy of it. But that copy is also a 4/4 black zombie with no mana cost. And you can only do it as a sorcery. So you get to bring another card from your graveyard back to your hand, but this time as a 7 mana cost. And the creature that comes in is a 4/4.
So I've long said that Eternal Witness is a fine card, but honestly, you need to use the body. You need mm-hmm. to flicker it. You need to reanimate it. You need to, a 2/1 needs to be relevant in terms of the creature type in order for you to actually gain a lot of value. Otherwise, just play Regrowth.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever you get something that's more and more expensive, the tutoring ability of it, the value that you get back becomes less impressive. Timeless Witness costs 4. That might be on the edge of playability when it comes to it. Like we talked about the power of Demonic Tutor versus Diabolic Tutor.
Right.
2 mana becomes insanely powerful, and 4 mana is like, oh, it just doesn't do what I want fast enough. I'm wondering if Timeless Witness might be one of those examples of it doesn't do what I want fast enough.
Yeah, 4 mana and 3 mana, there is a difference there. The fact that you can bring this back, but that 7 mana, I don't think you're typically going to be doing that very much, because, I mean, how much is it going to leave you at the end of the game? Like another 4 or 5 mana to play with? That's a lot.
Yeah, so I think that that's a little bit of a trap. I think you properly identified that. It's good to have it.
You need to be able to flicker this or use this a bunch, and you just like the Eternal Witness ability so much that you want to have it again in something else.
Yeah, I think the good comparison is Green Warden of Murasa, by the way, is a mythic that's only been printed once.
Right.
It's a 6 mana Eternal Witness, get something back from your graveyard. It's $1.80. 7,000 decks.
Oh, okay.
So once printed mythic. It's not, people are not going out of their way to get this card, and play it a bunch. And I think it's because even though it's got a powerful body and a powerful effect of returning something back, it just, 6 mana doesn't give you the play pattern you're looking for when you're returning stuff from your graveyard.
And now there's 7 mana Eternal X in the Timeless Witness. This might just be a very good card for limited and a little bit worse for commander. Again, if you're able to, you want the regrowth effect and you're able to flicker this, I can see that being much, much better.
Totally. Especially because it's an uncommon. Like, this is going to be way cheaper than Eternal Witness, even though they've done a good job of printing Eternal Witness into the ground.
All right. Next up is Tireless Provisioner. 2 and a green for a 3/2 elf scout with landfall. Whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, create a food token or a treasure token. So this is nice. Tireless Tracker is the easiest comparison. That's a creature that creates clue tokens when lands enter the battlefield, and then when you sacrifice them, you get +1/+1 counter on the Tireless Tracker.
Tireless Tracker, $12, 17,000 decks.
Very good card.
A staple in our format.
Yeah.
This is actually, because it doesn't generate the clues, card advantage, but it does generate treasure. This feels like it could be a close comparison to Lotus Cobra.
Yeah, except in this case, the treasures stick around. You don't need to use the mana immediately. And we've seen just how many cards now like having a lot of tokens on the battlefield.
Absolutely. We've seen that just having things on the battlefield, permanence is really good. And treasures are great. They play great. I love being able to save them up over a couple turns and then be able to double spell or to play something else really relevant, or use that mana to get something bigger, a bigger effect. It's quite good.
Yeah, and lots of landfall things to do in EDH, tons of ways to get fetch lands and all sorts of things. So you could be pumping out tons, or a fetch land with Tireless Provisioner is 2 extra mana that turn.
Oh my gosh, Guillaume loves having food around, Korvold loves having treasure around. I think that it's kind of a silly card, honestly. It's very good.
It's insanely good.
It's a new staple in our format. I'm glad it's at uncommon, but also I'm a little bit like, oh man, this is really good.
Well, maybe, you know, like, you're very rarely making food tokens, I think. You're just making treasures, and they're pretty darn good. And this is, this is a card that ramps you out. I wish this was red, almost, but...
Oh, yeah, I know, right? This could have been... I'm sorry, Jimmy.
It's okay. It's fine. It's okay. Maybe they'll make a Tireless Provisioner for red next time.
Just
and Modern Horizons 3. Fingers crossed.
Rabid Provisioner. Something red-related.
Yeah, Passionate Provisioner.
Passionate Provisioner. Yeah, love it. All right. Next up, we have Verdant Command. 1 and a green for an instant. This is a command in green. Wow. Very cool. You get to choose 2. Target player creates 2 tapped 1/1 green squirrel creature tokens. Already raised the alarm with squirrels. Every squirrel deck will play that. That's great.
Yep.
Let's find out the other options. Counter target loyalty ability of a planeswalker.
Okay.
That sounds narrow. Okay. Exile target card from a graveyard.
Ah, that's, you're going to do that one quite a bit.
Yeah. Only 1 card though. Target player gains 3 life.
Okay. So 2 mana instant make 2/1/1 green squirrel creature tokens is immediately playable in every squirrel deck. It's raise the alarm, but for squirrels.
Yeah. And a lot of token decks might want it too, but that seems to be the main mode. That's the mode that actually gives you that value on the battlefield, because gaining 3 life, throw that away.
Yeah.
Life gain deck, maybe? Who cares?
Countering a loyalty ability of a planeswalker, really corner case scenario.
Oh man, though, if you can get an ultimate with this.
Yeah, I mean.
It just makes this totally worth it.
Verdant Command against an ultimate might be one of the worst field bets ever. And so then they allow 2 little squirrels that hit you next turn too.
Oh my gosh. You counter the ultimate and then you kill squirrels, you kill with the squirrels.
Or you exile some cards from the graveyard too, card.
It's just one card though. I think that if this took out a whole graveyard, I would be way more inclined to play it. right now, I think I'm only playing it in squirrel decks.
Yeah, maybe a token generator deck. And again, if you have a lot of planeswalkers in your meta and you find that Verdant Command would be really good, then yeah, go for it. Otherwise, it seems like you'll most likely be exiling a problematic card from the graveyard as well as making 2/1s. But that even by itself isn't the worst. You are just not going to be gaining 3 life, though. That's definitely not going to be happening.
Yeah. Often. All right, green. What are we thinking about green so far?
Green looks better. It's interesting because Tireless Provisioner and Sanctum Weaver are the two standouts, and there were, I think Tireless Provisioner is just by far going to be the most played card of green out of this set, I think.
Totally agree.
Based on everything else I've seen
Absolutely.
Here.
Absolutely. I think that Abundant Harvest is not something you should overlook.
For sure. I like definitely, that too. That's
definitely
a good
card. All right. We have just a couple extra cards. We talked about most of the multicolored cards in the previous episode, but we just wanted to mention a few. The first one is Ignoble Hierarch.
Uh-huh.
This is a green card. It costs just a single green, but you can only play it in Gen decks because it is a 0/1 Goblin Shaman. It has Exalted, which means that whenever a creature you control attacks alone, that creature gets +1/+1 until end of turn, and you can tap it to add a black, a red, or a green.
Yep, so Ignoble Hierarch is a shout-out, obviously, to Noble Hierarch, which is in Bant colors. Maybe we'll be seeing this for all of these three cover color shards, whatever they are, wedges. Either way, this looks like potentially a new pattern for the future. Noble Hierarch also has Exalted, but I don't know. I mean, this is going to be very good, I think, in Modern, especially for the Jund decks.
Very good in Modern.
It's just okay in Commander. So do not go out of your way, I would say, to get this card if you're in those colors. Plenty of other cards can tap for, you know, those colors. And you can just also just put Land War Elves in your deck and be pretty happy with that too if you just want a one drop mana tapper.
It's also really narrow because this is it's all green, but it's also a multicolored card if in terms of Commander identity.
Right. It's a
you need to have red and black and green together. And by the way, I think you need to want a mana dork. You know,
yeah.
A lot of times we want more robust forms of mana generation. We want lands on the battlefield. Sometimes we want artifacts. And you have green. Like, you're playing a green card. So in many cases, a Farseek might be way better than this. So I think that you're right. Modern is going to love it. And many people in Commander are just going to be priced out of it. Actually, kind of similar to Noble Hierarch, right?
Yep.
Like, we've always known it's a pretty good card. But, like, you have to have a specific deck to play Bant. Mm-hmm. And you have to want a mana dork.
Yeah, and even then, like, it's just get another mana dork, right? You're in green and you have ramp, or there's tons of different ways to get up there. Ignoble Hierarch might be cute for a goblin deck in those colors.
I do have a Jund Goblin deck, and so I'm super excited. Nice.
Yeah, but otherwise, yeah, don't stress out about this. Just run any number of other really cheap ways to get lands out or mana dorks out in green.
For sure.
Okay, next up we have Goblin Anarchomancer. It's red and a green for a 2/2 Goblin Shaman. And it says each spell you cast that's red or green costs one less to cast. So this is like the Goblin red and blue one, right?
Goblin Electromancer.
Electromancer.
Or Baral or something like that. But yeah, those are only, for instance, sorceries. This is just any red spell or any green spell, which is pretty cool.
I would play this over the Ignoble Hierarch in my deck because it's going to potentially get you, you know, it could net you 3 free mana in turn if you cast 3 different spells with the reduction. I like these cards quite a bit.
You need to cast multiple spells a turn to have it be better than any other forms of ramp. This doesn't require a lot of analysis. It's just like an interesting little thing that actually, like, some people aren't paying attention to because it's not a rare or a mythic or anything like that. It's just like a player that could go really well in some of your decks if you want to cast lots of spells per turn.
Yeah,
and it's in Gruul, so it's in the Gruul episode.
If you're in the Gruul deck, like you're playing a Zendikos deck with big beaters, a Goblin Anarchomancer you'll be very happy having this in your deck just as a 2-drop. And one that's going to potentially net you a lot of free mana over the course of a game.
All right. Next, we have a land, and we've included in this episode because it belongs in green decks. It's Yavimaya, Cradle of Growth.
Yeah, this one's exciting.
Yeah, it's a legendary land, and it just says each land is a forest in addition to its other land types.
So this is following a big pattern we've seen in Modern Horizons 1 and now 2, which is taking staple cards from Magic and then making sure that they're represented in every color. So Yavimaya, Cradle of Growth is basically Urborg, Tomb of Yawgmoth, but in this case, it's forests. This card is good. It will be good for a long time.
I've put Urborg in so many decks, even mono black decks. Like, even it's great fixing. This comes into play untapped. It taps immediately for green because it is a forest itself. Mm-hmm. And it just means that in multicolored decks, you fix for green across all of your lands. And that's like the base level.
Yeah.
Like, there's a ton of other things you can do when you turn everything into a forest. Like, Arbor Elf becomes way better because you can untap your Guy's Cradle.
Oh, Guy's Cradle becomes a forest, too.
Nykthos.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. For sure.
Knight of the Reliquary is all about getting lands out. Nissa, Who Shakes the World, makes Art of Forest tap for double. Mm. Yeah, so Yavimaya, Cradle of Growth, again, this affects everyone at the table. So you're also turning, right? You can turn the fetch land into a land that just taps for land, so you don't have to use it anymore. Or if you have an Ancient Tomb and you don't want to lose the two life, you can use the Yavimaya, Cradle of Growth or the Urborg to just tap it for a different color instead.
Turning everything into forest means that you can utilize Forest Walk better.
Aha! So you have Eladamri, Lord of Leaves, Elvish Champion. That's cute. That's cute.
That's cute.
Probably a bit of a corner case.
It is a little bit of a corner case, but honestly, it just provides great fixing and some cute interactions as well.
And it, you know, green is such a base color for so many decks. Let's say you're playing a five-color deck, but green is your base color. Yavimaya, Cradle of Growth looks great because you can play this early, and let's say you need more green cards in the beginning of your game, then Yavimaya is going to get you there the entire way through and still have those lands be worthwhile later on.
Also, with this on this just around and floating around in the world, like it'll help you fix just across, because remember, it's symmetrical, like works for everyone.
Yeah, and someone else might be like,
I love
thank
how
you.
People are like, oh, here's, I have a Yawgmoth, you know, Tomb of Yawgmoth or whatever, Urborg.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, oh, I have an Urborg, and everyone's like, that plays black is like, sweet.
Yeah, sweet. Thank goodness.
This is another thing that's just like, oh,
Cabal
sweet.
Coffers, woo. Yeah,
I know, right?
Anything in that world.
It's so great.
Okay, so those are the red.
Little extras.
And
little extras
some
we got
extras,
there.
Yeah. Let's talk about what card we are most excited to put in Commander decks today. There's a lot of interesting ones here. What do you think, DJ?
I am excited about Sanctum Weaver. Yeah. I mean, I'm going to put Tireless Provisioner in a deck too, but like Sanctum Weaver is built for Enchantress. I have a Naya Enchantress deck.
Oh, nice.
And so this is something I'm so excited about because it's just like, oh, auto include, powerful mana dork, perfect inclusion.
Yeah, and definitely one of the cards that I'll be looking to get from this set as well. I'm going to try and put Chitter Spitter in a deck. I've been thinking about building a Squirrel deck for a while, but I also just have a token deck that I've loved for a long time. Maybe there's a world where I just sort of turn that deck into a Squirrel-based deck, and Chitter Spitter is going to be an awesome, awesome card in that deck for me.
I feel a little bit bad that I didn't mention A Glimpse of Tomorrow. Maybe I should put that in. I'll put that in a deck too.
Sure.
But all I don't right. think that, I think that some of those are on the edge of powerful, like maybe like Sanctum Weaver is on the edge of powerful, but like if we're talking about the most powerful cards in this episode right now, what are you thinking about?
Tireless Provisioner.
I'm thinking about Tireless Provisioner too.
Yeah, and it's the uncommon, which is crazy, but that is just how it goes sometimes. Again, this is a landfall card that is going to trigger so many times if you play it. If people don't remove it, you're going to be getting treasures. Your fetch lands are going to be giving you treasures. Your ramp spells, your cultivates, your Farseeks are going to be gaining you treasures off of this Tireless Provisioner. You're going to be able to play a 6-mana, 7-mana spell the turn after you play this
it's
card.
It's going
to
be crazy. Like, you know how often Lotus Cobra, you're like, ah, I'm just going to let that mana go to waste.
Oh, my
just
goodness,
like,
yeah.
You're not doing, like, the play patterns on this is so strong. You're gonna realize that you are curving out better, hitting bigger drops later. It's great.
And you will, maybe you'll use those tokens for something too. You could sack it to Chitter Spitter. Who knows? yeah, Tireless Provisioner, I think by far is going to be a new commander staple. And you also wrote down Yavimaya, a Cradle of Growth.
Yeah, it's just going to go in a lot of different decks for sure.
Yeah. All right, well, that is actually going to wrap it up. That's it for Modern Horizons 2 in the 99.
Wow.
Three episodes, probably around, what, like 4 to 5 hours of content? A lot of talking for me and DJ.
Yeah, for sure. But you know what? There's so many cards that are super strong in this. Like, we usually like talk about the one or two cards that we're interested in at the end of a set review at the last episode. But like, we had a lot to say at the end of each one of these sections. Like, there's a lot of good cards in here. And Modern Horizons has always provided us with a lot of depth to it. And I'm super impressed by the commons and uncommons that are in here that are very, very playable. I have a feeling that this is going to just enter into so many different commander decks.
I'm actually really excited for more commons and uncommons being in these set reviews, because Modern Horizons 1 had so many just heavy hitters across the board in every single area that it felt like the commons and uncommons, we missed out a little bit there. So it's nice to see it happening here.
And by the way, some of those heavy hitters were reprinted in this as old border frame cards.
Oh yeah.
You know, cool. I did an episode on those. So Jumbo Commander YouTube channel, if you want to see those reprints.
Out. Make sure you subscribe to our channel and DJ's. There's lots of good content coming your way. Finally, to the listeners, what red, green, / Ignoble Hierarch cards are you going to be putting into your decks? We want to know. Let us know in the comments. Let us know if we missed any interactions, or if you loved an interaction that we did, or you think that we're completely wrong or right about something. I mean, hey, I'm not stopping you from commenting, but maybe your conscience is. But post something nice, too, while you're at it. You know what? Just say something if
it's
you want to.
A lot of complicated
don't
directions,
don't do anything,
Jimmy,
if you don't want to either. Ah! Okay. Thanks, everyone, for watching. Of course, if you want to get these cards, go to cardking.com/commandzone. it's simpler than what I just said about commenting. You can just buy the card. You're on the website. Everything you need is right there.
It comes to you.
Yeah, it just literally just comes right to your door. You don't have to go type anything online except for cardking.com/commandzone. Ultra Pro as well. You can buy Ultra Pro products there. I've been buying a lot of their new Mythic Edition binders because I just like that they zip up. They're really nice to the touch and they store my cards really well. And I was talking to the prof and he said they're really good.
You do not want floppy binders that like sag and bend if they're standing up and down in your bookshelf. So you need like nice stern binders. So
and
you
I'm
don't
not
bend
gonna
your
lie, the fact that they zip up is huge because I have a lot of dust. I have animals in my house and you don't want hairs and stuff getting in there. So that's just the nice part about it. Okay, no end step today because we have so many cards to review that we're just burnt out. So let's go into the cleanup step. Big thanks to our amazing team here at the Command Zone. Lady Danger, Manson Lung, Craig Blanchett, Ashlyn Rose out for the Saga, Josh Murphy, Jake Boss, Patrick Nam, Jordan Pridgen, Arthur Meadowcroft, Sam Waldo, Gwarov Galadian, Dan Sheehan. Keeps going up and up and up. And now, Jumbo Commander as well, DJ himself. And special thanks, Jeffrey Palmer. He does the Living Card Animations that start our show on youtube.com/commandzonepodcast, as well as sometimes live behind us here on set. You can find him at Living Cards MTG. Woo-wee!
Great episodes, Jimmy. Excited to do some more.
Excited to do some more, too. And we will see you all next time, so make sure you subscribe.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Goodbye.
Peace.
For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.